By the mid-1800s, urban sewage disposal was a transatlantic problem. And it was English civil engineers who first worked out a solution. They called it the water carriage dilution method of waste disposal. And it involved the construction of an elaborate system of underground pipes connected into a great artificial intestine and anus that in Philadelphia fed waste directly into the Schuylkill and Delaware rivers. Soon the city was dumping hundreds of millions of gallons a day.
What happens is that what we do in a sewage treatment plant is no different than what a stream or a river does, except a stream or a river may... Excuse me a second.
Philadelphia's Northeast Sewage Treatment Plant handles about 210 million gallons of waste a day and has a capacity of almost double that. Former plant manager Jim Niccolo.
Like I was saying, we don't do anything different in a wastewater treatment plant than you do in a river, other than the fact that in a river it may take you 100 miles. In a wastewater treatment plant, you do that same thing in like a half mile square area. Here's a sample of wastewater coming in now, and I'll take you back to the effluent end of the tank and I'll show you how much it's cleaned up. When it leaves this process, it's between 50 and 60% clean. All right. And that's what we used to do before the 1950s in the city. It was just primary treatment.
Okay, before the 1950s, that was water.
Even after the last of Philadelphia's three new treatment plants went into operation in 1956, waste from the city still contributed about one-half the total pollution load on the river. Major sewer lines still remained unconnected, and the new plants proved incapable of handling heavy flows unleashed by rainstorms, as storm runoff mixed with raw sewage and flooded directly into the rivers.
I would say you operate a sewage treatment plant the same way that you operate and feed a human being, okay? When you eat your food, you're using your teeth to grind up solids and everything, okay? Because you can't take big pieces of solids down your throat, and that's kind of comparable to our bar screens. You want organics going down in your body to feed your body. We want organics coming into a sewage treatment plant. We have a set of digesters here. We have to digest our sludge. You have to keep the digesters at 98 degrees Fahrenheit because that's the same as your body temperature. The same bacteria that are in your body or in your stomach are the same bacteria that are in the digester.
And the digesters are these...
The digesters will go over. They're round tanks. They're about 110-foot diameter. They're 65 foot tall. Food coming into a wastewater treatment plant is the sewage, okay? So it's just like a human person, you take food in for nourishment, for all your muscles and for your bodily functions. We take all the food in because the bacteria we use to break down all the solids coming in into something that settles. In a wastewater treatment plant, we have to waste solids, just like a human being has to waste some of the material in there. When you digest the sludge, you generate methane gas. When a person breaks wind, that's methane gas. It's the same gas in there. We capture that methane gas and we use that to heat all of our buildings here.
Strict new environmental laws and mounting public concern over water pollution forced industries and municipalities to stop using the Delaware as an aqueous garbage can. Mother Nature did her part, too. Twin hurricanes in 1955 caused some of the worst flooding in the river's history, but they also scoured out the pollution-saturated bottom sediments that had been accumulating for decades, washing them out to the sea. And with this purging, the shad returned to the Delaware. Up in Lambertville, Fred Lewis was bringing in huge hauls.
Now, in 1963, which was the first year that the shad really started to come back, we caught a little over 6,000 shad, and we didn't fish too much. We did that in 70 hauls. That was the second best year since 1890.
Okay, finally! That just told me we aren't moving anywhere.
Feels like a big one?
Yeah, that was a nice one. It made a nice run there right off the bat.
Whoa. That was a nice jump.
That's a big one.
That's probably a buck. That doesn't look to be a roe. A roe might be a little bit bigger than that, but nonetheless, it's a nice fish. Right now, I'd say it's at least 4.5 pounds, probably more. It's getting tired. So now we have the moment of truth is at hand. Just try to work it upstream a little bit, get my net behind it, and just let it drift back right back into the net. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, there were just hundreds of thousands of shad coming up the Delaware River. And people would catch them inadvertently while fishing for something else in the Delaware, and many people didn't know what this fish was. And I guess someone identified them, and one fisherman started telling another, and they started heading down to the Delaware and had a lot of fun catching these shad, and word spread through local newspapers, and pretty soon you had a sport fishery developing.
Hey, Art, did you have a second hit, too? Did you?
Back in the old days, shad were fished with nets. Very few ever tried to catch them with a rod and reel. But by the early 1960s, some lucky anglers had discovered that the shad could be hooked with a lure, and that they made a great game fish. The poor man's salmon, some people called it.
I started fishing for them, I think it was 1963. I was only 12 years old.
Dennis Scholl grew up in Hellertown, a small village just a couple of miles southeast of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
And I was lucky. I caught one the first time I went out. My father and I each caught one shad the first time we went out. And that was it. I'll never forget it because it was raining, and I was just a kid with a little cheap spinning rod and reel, and I kept casting and casting. Finally, I hooked something. And the second that this fish was hooked, it leaped up out of the water, and in the rain, I saw this great silver flash out in the river, the fish jumping, and that was all. And I just kept yelling, "Dad, Dad." And I think he thought I was drowning, but we were both hooked after that, and we went every year.
Hi, this is the Shad Hotline, brought to you by the Delaware River Shad Fishermen's Association. This is your report for Friday, May 10th. First of all, we want you fellas to know that next Wednesday, we have our monthly meeting. That's May 15th at 7:30 p.m. at the C. Weichel Fire Company Social Hall. Our program for the evening will be about down rigging for shad and all about flutter spoons. So the new
shad fishing was touch and go during the 1960s. Some years bad weather increased river flow and allowed the fish to pass through the Philadelphia pollution block into the upper river. But in years with low rainfall, the block remained intact, barring the shad from their upriver migration.
The river is in pretty good shape right now. The water level's up a little bit from all that rain we had earlier this week, but it is clearing off nicely. Very little debris floating down. Water temperatures on Thursday were right around 59 degrees. The shad are biting, but some of them are spawning already. It's that time of the year. Fred Lewis is still catching fish at Lambertville, however, so there's fish moving up the river. It's in good shape right now. If you have the time, get out there, stick a little closer to the shoreline. The shad are traveling up out of the main current. That is your report for right now.
Today, the Delaware River boasts the nation's largest shad run, 370 miles from the mouth of the Delaware Bay to the river's headwaters in New York State. The return of the shad has spurred the growth of a booming recreational industry of sport fishermen. In recent years, spring shad festivals along the length of the Delaware have become annual and well-attended events, reviving the excursions of the late 19th century, when city residents would take the train down to the river during the first warm days of spring to eat plank shad, listen to outdoor concerts, and explore along the banks of the river.
Can you tell me about what's going on here?
The Shad Festival?
Yeah, about how...
Well, this is the Delaware Shad Association puts this on every year. And we have 90 planks that we have here. And there's one fish on each one with a strip of bacon on. And then we put it over here and serve it with watercress, bread, potatoes, and the old type lime tea.
Why do you cook them like this?
Because that's the old-fashioned Arabian style from Bethlehem way back in 1800s.
So how many people will you feed here today?
Well, we should feed 850 customers and about 1,500 to 600 between the help and sports riders. Do you want to eat?
One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Each spring, over 70,000 recreational fishermen head down to the Delaware River to fish for shad. The season is short and intense. Growing interest in the fish led in 1976 to the organization of the Delaware River Shad Fishermen's Association, of which Dennis Scholl is longtime president.
We have a lot of fun tonight. This is not our normal run-of-the-mill meeting, and we're going to tell you exactly where the shad are in the Delaware River so you can all run down there tomorrow and catch a few if there's any water.
Shad fishing is now a multi-million dollar tourist industry. Recreational fishermen have teamed together with environmentalists to form a powerful lobby for the protection of the Delaware River and its tributaries. Sportsmen's lobbies helped defeat the Tox Island Dam and have spearheaded efforts to enable the shad to return to other river systems. Pressed by the fishermen's associations, the Pennsylvania legislature has set aside $3.5 million for fish passageways along the dam at Easton, where the Lehigh River flows into the Delaware.
It is a hard sell, but the one factor in our favor is that this is going to create a new fishery, and a new fishery is going to create tourism. And that's one thing that's very appealing to the state of Pennsylvania. Part of the survey that we conducted back in 1986 was to determine the amount of money that a shad fisherman spends when he or she goes fishing. That survey pointed out that approximately $3.5 million are spent for fishing on the Delaware each year. And through that, it's been estimated that a new fishery on the Lehigh would generate about $1.3 million annually in tourism revenue. Now, that's new money coming into the Lehigh Valley area, and a lot of it will be coming in from out-of-state anglers.
Dave Childs is president of the Lehigh River Preservation, Protection, and Improvement Foundation, which has spearheaded the campaign to see shad return to the Lehigh.
Environmentalists and people that are looking at the tourism, both working toward the same end, which is very unusual. Usually they're quite at odds. So we have almost universal support for this, so we feel it should really go over well. Nobody loses when you... This is a historic opportunity to return a fish to a river system that hasn't been able to swim there for 150 years.
Back in Philadelphia, Jim Niccolo makes sure that the water the city puts into the Delaware River meets stringent state and federal standards. In the 1980s, Philadelphia Water Commissioner Carmen Guarino developed and patented a new system of secondary treatment that duplicates the same biological processes carried on in the river.
This is the secondary part of the plant. This is our surfact process. Our surfact process is a combination of two different processes, which is a conventional aeration tank, an activated sludge plant, and an RBC. I'll show you what an RBC looks like. This is one of 280 discs that we have. They're 25 foot long, 12 foot diameter, and it's a rotating plastic disc. And what you see with these rotating discs is this is a fixed film media where the bacteria, the protozoa, the microorganisms, everything grows on this media. It dips back into the water, so it provides a food source for all the microorganisms on the disc. It comes then out of the water, so it feeds it oxygen again. And what happens in this secondary treatment process is that you convert a dissolved solid and a colloidal solid into a settable solid.
When final improvements to the Northeast plant came online in March 1991, Philadelphia, for the first time in its history, had the capacity to handle all the waste that flow into the city's sewers, even during the heaviest of storms. It's an extraordinary accomplishment, completed at the cost of over $1 billion and a century of technological development.
This is the effluent discharging from the Northeast plant.
It's at a rate of about 200 million gallons a day. It's very clean, it smells good, and it's significantly cleaner than what the Delaware River is. There's no oxygen sag here with what we're
not
putting in
out
here.
Of,
no,
yeah,
not coming out of the plant.
Water treatment.
And at the two, there's dissolved oxygen. There's at least 6 milligrams per liter, at least that, 6 milligrams per liter dissolved oxygen in our effluent. And southeast and southwest are pure oxygen plants, and theirs are significantly higher.
It's Saturday evening. Fred Lewis has just pulled in 600 feet of net filled with shad, which gleam in the setting sun. Art Lupien of the New Jersey Division of Fish and Wildlife pulls fish out of the webbing, weighing and tagging each one.
Okay, here comes the haul now.
It's frozen already. Well, I didn't even get them.
It's cold.
The early results are encouraging. It looks like this year's run will be a large one. Down in the Delaware Bay, Clyde Roberts fishes out of Port Penn in a 22-foot open launch.
So where you lay off the second one?
Right behind this one. We allow enough distance between them in order when we start picking them up, taking a fish out, we'll have enough time to take another net on before the other one's on top of us. You lay them too close, then you run into a problem.
Clyde lays out about 600 feet of net, which drifts silently with the current. A few minutes later, he and Ray haul it in, dumping the fish into the bottom of the boat. Shad isn't as popular as it used to be. It's tough to debone, which raises the price. And folks eat less of the cholesterol-rich shad roe they once adored. But Clyde still fishes almost every day he can get out, savoring the return of life to the river.
I've lived to see this water, fish come in this water we've never had before. It's amazing. We have trout coming up here now. I catch them in the sturgeon. That's out where I sturgeon fish. We have bluefish up here. We have black puppy drum come up. We even caught a small Spanish mackerel one time, didn't we, the last time out there. I've lived to see this improved water quality that just has amazed me. Because when I was a lad in this town, this water was so polluted, it was unbelievable. I mean, it was nothing but human garbage and refuse. Oh, it's terrible.
We didn't really realize it, though. We thought that's where it was supposed to be, you know?
That's the way it's supposed to be. It's like Lyndon Johnson said, you never missed a bathtub because you never knew what one was.
As the quality of water continues to improve, the annual shad runs continue to grow, to the delight of those who have worked for its return.
We've done the population estimates annually for 8 years, and between 1975 and 1980, the population estimate ranged from 118 to 233,000. In 1981, it jumped to 546,000, and it's been holding up there right around 500,000 since then. So you can see that there's been a real dramatic change in the numbers of shad that are coming into the river now to spawn.
Today, the future looks bright for the shad. Joe Miller estimates that the Delaware River can hold about 1 million fish. And they're re-entering other rivers as well. In 1991, the Philadelphia Electric Company completed a $30 million fish passageway on the Susquehanna. But despite the recent recovery and ambitious plans for restoring fisheries to other river systems, water quality in the Delaware and its tributaries is still in constant danger. Agricultural runoff, residential development along the river's banks, oil spills, and the illegal dumping of toxic wastes all still jeopardize the river's health.
The only time the better days came is when the proper habitat was restored to them. See, if you give a fish a proper habitat, nature will take care of itself. But the pollution is the worst thing, you know.
The old shad culture is gone forever. Never again will farmers hawk shad from the backs of their wagons, or fleets of open shad skiffs fish the tides of the Delaware Bay. But the shad has returned, spawning a huge recreational fishing industry and a powerful lobby for the protection of the river. Today, fish and plants are returning to sections of the Delaware and its tributaries that have not seen them for 100 years. And as the rivers come back to life, the spawning shad continue to reclaim more and more of their former domain.
There's no doubt about it that water quality is improving the numbers of shad coming into the river. I think the easiest place to see that is in the findings of the juvenile studies.
Excuse me.
But the shad are spawning in the lower portions of the river now. Even right around Trenton, there's documented spawning taking place, and that didn't happen even 10 years ago, even 6 years ago it didn't happen. And that's probably the best indication of improved water quality. And, you know, your tougher pollution standards and your building of more sewage treatment plants, that it all adds up eventually and makes for a cleaner habitat. Shad is a symbol of the clean environment. It has always been one, and it will be forever.
Hey, what happened to all the fish today?
The Return of the Shad was written and produced by Charles Hart. Special thanks to Roger Allen, Carol Buchter, Ann Rayburn, Ron Schuer, Becky Thorne, and Eliza Hardy. Music by Charles Hardy and Nevitt Bartow. Engineer John Stevens. Produced at the recording studios of the Yellow Springs Institute, Chester Springs, Pennsylvania. Funding provided by the Pew Charitable Trusts and the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts. The Return of the Shad is a project of the Philadelphia Maritime Museum.
Okay, this is the last cast. You have to have a last cast.